Welcome to Dodgers Daily. Casey Porter here, joined by Coach Holt. So glad that you decided to tune in. Coach, we have a lot of great news, of course, since I've talked to you last. It's been a three-game series sweep against the Nats, but last night specifically, hey, I'll tell you what, you had the offensive explosion a couple of nights ago, but last night to me gets me excited in a lot more ways because you know this offense is going to explode from time to time. That's just something you expect. The one thing I wanted to see, can it win close games? Can it execute maybe in a 2-1 type of game, which is what the playoff type games are going to be like? So last night in a lot of ways was very encouraging if you're a Dodgers fan.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, I mean, Case, I was just reading, you probably already knew this because you keep up on your homework better than I do, but I was reading about Yamamoto yesterday, and his fastball, opponents were hitting 355 off of him before last night. That's amazing to me. I mean, it's what we talked about earlier. Maybe it's flat, maybe it's straight, whatever. But that wasn't the case here. I know Austin Barnes talked about his fastball in the bullpen looked great, and he took it on the mound with him. And, of course, his splitter is like a 119 average or something like that. So his breaking stuff has been, you know, almost unhittable. But that was great to see on his part. Then come up with some big hits. Teoscar goes deep again.
Hell yeah.
You know, I think that's very encouraging. You know, if you go out and win one, of course, taking a three-game series from anybody, it's Major League Baseball is great. Now, the Dodgers won four in a row. They're showing some kind of upward trend on a lot of areas there. So that it's absolutely correct. We know we can do a slugfest. We know we're going to win those because we have the sluggers. But I'm like you, very encouraging to see the low-scoring game and starting pitching, bullpen, everything working together was a great, great sign.
It absolutely was. Let's go to Yamamoto. Okay, last outing, Coach. You mentioned all year long his fastball has been getting hit. That definitely was the case last outing. That was what was very concerning for me because as a major leaguer, any pitcher, and I mentioned this in that show, if you can't throw a fastball that can get outs, right, you can't really throw. I mean, you have to be so perfect with your off-speed stuff. You're not going to be consistent because being perfect with your off-speed stuff, as good as Yamamoto's is going to be a very difficult thing to be consistent with. So the last outing, not last night, but the outing before last night, he threw his fastball the third most, and he threw more strikes with it. Last night, he actually featured the fastball more, and it got hit less. And because of that, he was able to orbit all those secondaries that are just so elite that he has around that. And then you get the sixth-inning great performance from Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Definitely, easily his best performance in a Dodgers uniform.
His fastball's basically been right down the middle, and it's flat. You know, there's not a whole lot of movement that's been hit. I mean, he did spot up better the last night. It needs to be, you know, on the corners, inside out. You know, spot that thing up better. It's still 95. You know, whatever. It's still good enough to win in the big leagues along with his other stuff. So that's an encouraging sign for the Dodgers. I know that young man's got a lot of pressure on him, unbelievable pressure on him to come in his first year in the major leagues and. Just like Otani's had pressure his whole life in the big league, so it's nothing new to him. But Yamamoto, you know, that's an encouraging sign for the Dodgers to see. They know it's in there, and that's a good sign. And maybe if he finds that spotting up that fastball along with everything else, he can be an elite pitcher, especially help the Dodgers out.
And he needs to be an elite pitcher, no doubt about that, especially if Walker Buehler, we don't know what's going to happen with him still. He's still in AAA Oklahoma City. Just to give you an example of how much better the fastball was for Yoshinobu Yamamoto, the average exit velos went down from 99.5, the performance before, not last night, but the performance before that. It went down from 99.5 to last night, it was just 81.1. So you're talking about shaving about 20 miles an hour off the average exit velo on that fastball. And then what was so great about his off-speed stuff, his splitter, his cutter, his curveball, all that, was that he didn't just like throw it for a strike 100% of the time, kind of like this four-seam fastball. He threw it in there like 60% of the time, which meant that it was, I don't want to say effectively wild because that's not an accurate way to say it, but it wasn't just like in the zone so much that hitters could get comfortable on it. It was in the zone like the exact perfect amount, like right around 50%.
Well, the hitters know, you know, Case, we're like, there's no secrets in any, really in high school even now. We watch film, our guys that watch film all the time, you know, there's really no secret there. The hitters know, hey, settle his fastball. His fastball is going to be there. It's going to be hittable. Everybody's been hitting it. We're going to hit it. And then he brings it where it's not exactly right down the middle. It's a different. So now the hitters, you know, now you got him where you want him. I'm going to have a heck of a time hitting any of his breaking stuff, and now he's spotting up on the fastball. So that's why I think we saw what we saw there. Like I said, those guys know the same thing we're saw. I'm not sitting here still at Oklahoma, you know, get anything earth-shattering. I saw right. The same thing. They got guys that do that on a daily basis by the hour probably. So they knew that too. The hitters knew that going in, and yet they still got shut out. So that's a great sign.
Yep. I think we saw a sweet spot last night. Maybe we'll see. We'll get more data to actually kind of look at it. But I think when he's throwing his fastball for a strike 60 to 65% of the time, I think that tells you he's using the periphery of the strike zone, the corners of the strike zone, the top of the strike zone, the bottom of the strike zone, instead of the middle of the strike zone. So I think that's something that's very interesting to watch with Yoshinobu Yamamoto moving forward, because if he's effective like he was with his fastball last night, again, average exit velocity of 81.1, forget about it. You're not hitting Yoshinobu Yamamoto, because behind that, the secondaries are probably as good or better than anybody else in the game. So super exciting. This is the first time as a Dodgers fan I've gone, oh yeah, man, I'm super excited about what I saw from Yoshinobu Yamamoto from a consistent basis.
No, there's no doubt about it. That's, you know, we've all kind of had the back people outside of Dodgers. I'm talking about the fans outside the Dodgers, people who don't like the Dodgers because they're the Dodgers, like we hate the Yankees because they're Yankees, whatever the case may be. You know, they're enjoying it. He'd already faced some major league hitters, you know, in World Baseball Classic, and shown he can get people out. It's just a matter of getting used to being an every 4 or 5 day starter, or, you know, on a regular basis, and everybody having information on you. You know, everybody having the book on you, and everybody
like
knowing.
Like you said, the pressure.
The pressure, you know, is amazing. So, you know, that's a great sign for, you know, like I said, you know, he's got great makeup. The Dodgers did their homework. They're not giving a guy a bunch of money if he's soft mentally. You know he's not soft physically, but if he's soft mentally, we wouldn't be seeing him where he's at right now.
Dodgers score single runs in the second and the eighth. Tio Hernandez hits the home run, and then he strikes out two times later, Coach. It was like, I just kind of giggled because, well, you're giggling right there, right? Okay, yeah. I mean, that's like literally exactly why. First of all, kill lefties, right? And then hit a home run and then strike out a couple times. That's like literally exactly the Tio Hernandez that the Dodgers signed up for, and that's the Tio they got last night.
And they're getting what I think – the Dodgers are getting exactly what they thought they were going to get.
Yes.
Kind of like Max Muncy.
Yes.
You know, he's a run producer. He's hitting about 240. So, you know, you're getting what, you know, we're getting what we think we're going to get from Max Muncy. And now you're getting, we knew Teoscar was a good offensive player, but there's going to be some give and take there. And he's exactly who we thought he was. 6 home runs. I guess that's tied for the team lead. And, you know, he's producing. He's a good defensive player. So that's a really good pickup for the Dodgers. I think we felt that way when it happened. And that's a good pickup for the Dodgers. And it showed out.
And he got the Dodgers on the board. Coach, have you ever seen 4 innings in a row end in double play? That was crazy.
I don't think so. Very, very seldom you see 4 double plays in an entire game. You know, yeah. Almost hits 4 straight innings, but something you rarely see. You see a lot of double plays in the big leagues, but not usually ending innings like that 4 in a row.
I thought it was interesting. Freddie Freeman made the base running mistake. You know, the ball that was hit to right center, and then he just started running on it. That was the 4th double play where it wasn't the traditional, conventional type double play. It was more of a fly ball, throw him out because it didn't tag situation. So Freddie Freeman makes the mental mistake, I guess you would, being a little bit too overly aggressive on the base pass. Then the next time he comes up, Coach, you have a base open, and you know a guy like Freddie Freeman, as great as he is, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He just made a mistake the last time, as far as base running, the last time that he played offense. You knew that he was going to come through in that scenario, right? The Nats decide to pitch to him. I could not believe. I know the Dodgers have a stacked lineup, and they have every hitter's a good hitter. But still, just from a coach's perspective, you know Freddie Freeman's in the mode right now. Hey, man, I messed up last time. I've got to do something to make up for it. The base open they threw to him, I could not believe that. I was happy they did, and he comes through and gives the Dodgers a second run.
That's a case probably a manager going with what he currently sees over what he really knows. Freddie Freeman's elite. He went with the current situation. That's why they didn't walk him right there. Normally you would, and the manager's probably kicking himself for not doing that.
Mookie Betts is absolutely amazing. Hey, it's not just the hits, Coach, but hey, it's the way that he grinds at bats too. If you look at the inning that the Dodgers scored, him and Otani, they all had like 6 pitch at bats. So, I mean, the more that you grind a pitcher, the more likely they are to make a mistake, right? And so I just thought not just the base hits, but the way that they actually worked the pitchers last night was really nice.
It's a thing of beauty watching these veteran players, not just a good major league hitter, a veteran major league hitter, but an elite like Mookie is. Yeah. Watch them work pitches. They get a pitch they really can't handle. They have the ability to foul it off. You know, most guys don't have that ability, but most of the elite hitters do. He has the ability to foul off something that he don't know he can handle because he knows it's probably got a chance of being a strike. Elite in everything he does.
Mookie Betts had two hits last night, his ninth multi-hit game of the year. He's been on base in all but two games this year, and he has hits in 22 of the 27 games that he has played. He's hitting .374 OPS, .1113, and he scored 27 runs. This dude is simply fantastic. I personally like the fact that the Dodgers, in his prime, are getting prime production with him at shortstop. I'm not one that thinks that you need to conserve for the future. I'm one that, hey, right now he's at his best, so let's put him at the most crucial positions, and let's try to go win two or three World Series. That's where I'm at on him.
Well, the Dodgers got very fortunate there. I mean, they had a plan C, I guess you want to call it, a shortstop. But when you got to say, hey, this isn't really working real well right now with Lux, and, you know, let's give Lux a benefit of the doubt. Guys coming back from seizing long injury, they don't just come right back in and get back where they were. Well, sure. That's another part we don't talk about enough. You know, I think, you know, we're being too harsh on him sometimes. You know, he's just come off a major injury. We missed the whole year. But isn't it a great luxury to say, well, that's not really working out. Oh, okay, we'll put Mookie Betts over there. Give me a break. Yeah. I mean, to have the luxury of doing that, and then Lux being able to play at second base right there, and we all really feel like he's not washed up offensively yet. He's just rounded back into form. And, you know, I know at some point, you know, we're going to see the Gavin Lux that we've seen before. Hopefully it's not something to carry over from his injury. He looks healthy and he seems healthy and everybody says he's healthy. So, you know, I think he's still a young man. We'll get him back to where he was. But isn't that awesome that, you know, your plan B is Mookie Betts? Give me a break.
Or Miguel Rojas.
Awesome. Miguel Rojas, yes. That's your plan C. You know, your plan B and C aren't bad at all. You can play the whole major league season with those guys. So
I think plan A could easily be to trade market, too, if they feel like they need to move Mookie Betts back to second base. That brings us into the Gavin Lux talk. I thought it was brilliant that they put the 150 at-bat mark on just kind of that 150 at-bat leash for Gavin Lux and coming out and saying that. Because for Gavin Lux, Coach, it's almost like a car salesman. You get a quota, right? I mean, at least you know black and white what the opportunity that you're going to be given, which allows Gavin Lux to go back into, if you heard his last interview with Kirsten Watson, he uses the term process all the time. I wrote an article on Dodgers Daily about Gavin Lux that says, trust the process. He's always been a guy that's had massive success at every level till he got to the major leagues. And so it was one of those deals to where he would barrel up a ball and be mad about it. Well, you can't be. You got to trust the fact that, hey, if I barrel up a ball and I get out, well, then a month later, I'm going to dink one into left field and it's all going to even out, right? So I was really encouraged to hear that Gavin Lux used the term process. I have to be process-oriented right now. And the fact that the Dodgers came out and gave him a specified 150 at-bats, I think that allowed Gavin Lux, I think it took some pressure off him because he's like, okay, well, I still have 75, 80 at-bats, 90 at-bats, something like that left to get all of these feels back. And I really think that allowed him to go back into process mode. And because of that, I think it relaxed him.
Well, there's no doubt about it. As we've mentioned several times before, he's not where he's at, first of all, if he's weak. Weak mentally. He's not putting the work in. And the Dodgers aren't making that statement publicly if he's not putting the work in. But that's a great way, as you mentioned, of putting it, telling him it's 150. We know if he's on the uptick and he hits 150 mark, it could be 175 at bats where they go, they pull the plug. So that's just kind of a benchmark there. 150. We'll kind of do some evaluation there, and if he's on the uptick, they're just going to keep rolling with it. And we all anticipate him being on the uptick because he's putting the work in. You know him, but you've been around him, Case, when he's in minor leagues. He's going to do the process. I think I was reading the deal. He was out hitting off a minor leaguer the other day. Him and some other guys like 5 hours before the game, they're out taking BP off of a minor league pitcher doing some work down there. So you know they know, and he's still a young man. They're not. They're not being straight. So we talked about this before on the podcast. You know, how long do you go before you pull the plug? Well, they just told us it's 150, but me and you both know it can go up to 175, 200 sure. if he's showing an upswing.
Yeah, 2019, I was on the Oklahoma City grounds crew. He had made an error or two. I think the entire infield had made an error or something. They hadn't played very well. You know how the dog days of summer goes. I think yep. the big club called down to AAA Oklahoma City and said, hey, take some extra ground balls today, right? So they go out and it's like 1,000 degrees and Gavin Lux has this Bluetooth player with a disco ball on the top of it. And he goes out and he's just loosey-goosey having a hell of a good time. And it's like 1,000 degrees outside, Coach. It's like no. 4 o'clock in August. And it's been 1,000 degrees for like 3 months. And he walks out of the clubhouse and he goes, God dang, it's hot out here. And it's the funniest thing. It's like, this. Here's like the number one prospect in all the minor leagues, and he's whining about being hot just like everybody else does. And then I say that only to say, then he goes out and takes like 700 ground balls. I mean, it yeah. was like very impressive, the work that he put in.
He's success-oriented, you can tell, and he's going to do whatever it takes. And the Dodgers are a long way from giving up on him yet.
Yeah, and I thought the lineup last night was easy. You talk about the 4 double plays in a row. In the third inning, the rally ended on a Teo Hernandez ground ball that would have been Will Smith hitting in that situation. Yeah. So you miss Will Smith, and that's by the lineup there. And then Kike leads off with a hit in the next inning. Chris Taylor hits in a double play. Guess who that would have been? That would have been Max Muncy. You mentioned yeah. him a minute ago. So yeah. that type of lineup that sets up like that definitely does make it tougher on the Dodgers from time to time. But that brings us, kind of segues us into the Chris Taylor talk, Coach. Chris Taylor 0-for-4 last night. So we saw the 150 at-bat leash for Gavin Lux. What type of leash do you give Chris Taylor? 100 at-bat? I mean, he's not an everyday player, right? So no. the at-bats aren't going to rack up as fast as Gavin Lux. So how many at-bats do you give Chris Taylor to figure it out? Do you give him 75, 80? What's the ballpark number do you think the Dodgers will give him?
To me, it'd be less than 100. Like you said, yep. Case, he's not an everyday player. That's a tough position to be in. It's a great, you know, you're still in the major leagues, but that's a tough position because you don't play every day, yet we expect you to produce when you come in there. And he's done that for the most part. You know, him – you know, in the past with Kike, guys like that who can play a lot of positions, they're very valuable. But at some point, they have to produce when they get in there. You know, we've all loved Chris Taylor because he can play everywhere. And, you know, I think, the positive about him is that he's an aggressive hitter. I think that can be a negative sometimes, too. There's a lot of swing and miss. You know, he can have great at-bats at time. I always go back to the 13-pitch at-bat and they hit a home run, you know. That still sticks in my mind. But there's also so many swing and misses. And I think, you know, for a guy who's not playing every day, yeah, they're not going to have near as much. Now, they're giving him benefit of the doubt because he's been with them for a while, and there's that trust factor and know what kind of individual he is. But at some point, you know, if a guy's coming off the bench, he's got to hit better than 040. You know,
yeah, especially
that's a given.
Especially if Andy Páez continues to play the way that he's playing. I know Andy Páez, he had one hit last night, but I want to take you back to a sequence that really showed some maturity for him. He got a changeup, Coach, and he spit on it. He saw that changeup low in the zone, right? And then he didn't swing at it. So he's been taught, you know, they hear the term all the time, see the changeup up. See the changeup yeah. up. Because if you don't see the changeup up, it's going to dive down into the dirt out of the zone. So yeah. he saw the changeup down and laid off of it. Then he saw a changeup the next pitch and hit it. And for a rookie, those kind of little sequences and those kind of games inside the games are very exciting for me because it just shows that he actually has a really nice plan at the plate.
And that's not just showing, you know, Casey Porter and Guthrie, Oklahoma. That's showing the big club. That's showing the Dodgers organization. This guy's got what it takes. You know, we just need to get, you know, he just needs his opportunity. And he's getting it. You know, this is the way this thing's happened in the big leagues. You know, you get an injury with Hayward, you got to move Teoscar, now you got an opening out there. Some guys take advantage of it, some guys don't. And, you know, that's great to see that process taking place.
Yeah, another at bat for Andy Páez is that he had an 8-pitch at bat. He fouled off several different nice off-speed pitches to finally get. Of course, we all know that Andy Páez wants to hit a fastball, right? His first mm-hmm. like 2 or 3 hits in the major leagues, he was ambushing fastballs. So, I mean, the other teams know that. So how is he going to get back to a fastball? We'll foul everything off, get an 8-pitch at bat, swing at the right pitches. We always talk about that for him. 8-pitch at bat, finally got to back to a fastball that was out of the plate. He didn't do damage with it, but you know, after 8 pitches, you get back to a fastball. Most times, Andy Pyles is going to do damage. So you're kind of looking for indicating forecasts for future success. That definitely is it. If you've been following Dodgers Daily much at all, the Andy Pyles, of course, we even did a feature on it about 3 weeks ago. I think it was one of our high velo features. It may have been a hot take, but the story behind him is very similar to Will Smith. Absolutely elite plate discipline. He hits a lot of fly balls. Matter of fact, he hits twice as many fly balls as he does ground balls on average. And then he pulls the ball 50% or better on average. So when you pull the ball, you hit fly balls, you would think, well, that guy's going to strike out a whole bunch because he's going to be jumpy. He's going to be trying to hit the ball out front. Andy Pyles does not, because he has elite plate discipline. And I wanted to highlight that those two sequences last night just to give you an example at the major league level of that elite plate discipline. So, hey, last night, again, it was a good game overall, a close game, a one-run game. It was on the road, so all is good for the Dodgers.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I get to go to Toronto now. I say get to go. They hadn't been there in 8 years. You know, yeah. Playing, getting ready to start a series in Toronto, and the Dodgers going over the head of steam, a 4-game winning streak. And like you said, a great all-around game there, and really a great all-around series for the Dodgers against the Nats. So that's a good sign for the Dodgers moving forward.
No doubt about that. So super exciting. Looking forward to the Toronto series. Coach, it's great to see your face this morning. Love you. So I want to thank you for coming on in.
You bet. I always look forward to it, Casey. Don't usually like getting up early in the morning, but anytime I can hang out with you and talk about the Dodgers and just see you and visit with you, it's always a great day.
Hey, you're retired, right? You can go back to bed.
That's right. Yeah, I'm either you go back to bed or we'll get some donuts from Melissa.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, I want to thank you. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the LA segment of this. Hey, stay tuned. Austin is coming on the other side. So Austin's going to come on, and we're going to take a trip down on the farm. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get right to it. Let's take a trip down on the farm. Starting as we do each and every down on the farm, Austin, we're going to start at single A. Rancho Cucamonga, second outing for Carlos Duran. I know we covered him the last time. This is a big guy, 6'7", and look at that gigantic breaking ball for him. You've got a chance actually to see him quite a bit at Great Lakes. He's been up and down because of injury. This guy's super talented. I know a lot of people projected his fastball to probably peak out at about 96. He's what you would call a kind of a max effort type 96. It's not as free and easy for other people maybe to get to that 96, but yes, he still has a big arm, and the only thing that has kept him down to this point has been injury. So it's good to see him put back-to-back outings together, and for him last night, Carlos Duran went 2 innings again.
Yeah, it's just good to see Carlos just be healthy again and back on the mound, getting some starts right now in Rancho Cucamonga. And you can see with all of these pitches, his stuff is absolutely wicked, generating a ton of movement. And then with his big, tall 6'7" frame, he's able to get just some velocity on that fastball as well and be a really effective pitcher. It's just great to see Carlos have some success, but most importantly, be back and healthy, because when Carlos Duran is back on the mound and healthy, he's a force, and he's somebody that Dodgers fans have been keeping an eye out for quite a while. He's missed a lot of time due to injury. Now that he's healthy, though, Dodgers fans should be watching of Carlos.
Kind of reminds me of the Hyunjin Choi type time frame, if you will. They were both huge prospects, both really, I mean, just climbing up the ladders, and then just both just got completely stomped by injuries. Hyunjin Choi actually made a start for AAA Oklahoma City. Okay, this is Jordan Thompson right here. I know this is when he is with the Loons. He went up with the Loons for a while, went back down to Rancho Cucamonga, a young man that was drafted last summer out of LSU. This is a guy that's a shortstop type guy, another versatile, good athlete type infielder. That really, if you go back to his career at LSU and even with his short time at Great Lakes, has a real knack for coming up with the big hit, doesn't he?
Yeah, he has a big knack for coming up with the big hit. He's got some of that opposite field, right center field gap type power to him, where he's able to drive it opposite field, like you can see on this play right here. Just incredible. He's got some good power to him. He's got some wheels behind him as well. He's got a lot of different tools, moves around on the infield. And last night, he had an incredible performance for the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, where he is currently at, going 3-for-6. Had a triple in there as well. Jordan Thompson, JT, watch out for him.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And so, hey, good night for Jordan Thompson. A good night for Carlos Dudon. Also, another guy that we have been following very closely that had a really good night last night is Kenny George. Had him a couple of hits and an RBI, and also scored a couple of runs. So, you know, anytime Kenny George is getting on base, he is going to score.
Oh, yeah, he's going to score. He's got – we've talked about – Kenny George for quite a while, and that's because of his blazing electric speed that he has on the base path. One thing that has gone perhaps a little bit underrated, at least to this point in the season, is his ability to draw a bunch of walks. He's able to find unique ways to get on base, and when he's on base, he is an absolute electric force on there. You could see during that just last play, he was able to beat that ground ball out and get on base, and especially with the rest of the hitters that this Rancho Cucamonga Quakes offense has, which how good Jake Geloff has been swinging the bat. When you have JT, when you have Zaire Hope, who's been swinging it really well, it's Joe Vetrano, all of these different guys, getting Kenny George on base, allowing him to wreak havoc on the base paths as well. And also, he's got an underrated hit tool to him, too. All of these different tools are coming together, and you can see why the Dodgers drafted him in the first round.
No doubt about that. Hey, you got to see this incredible performance with your own eyes last night, and that is Jared Kairos. That curveball, man, I posted on Twitter. I'm not sure that curveball that he throws that just literally comes out of the sky. That one, wow. I'm not sure that's not the best curveball of any pitcher in all the minor leagues. Jared Kairos has a ridiculous curveball. The fastball was in the 94 range. I know he sits 92, 94. I think he was more consistently at the upper end of that last night, around 94. He also has the slider, and it's all about the pitchability. As you're watching these videos here, see how he went up and in, and then he kind of had a little bit of arm side run to that one. That one was center cut there to Griffin Dorsching, who I got to see at Oklahoma State. But you see him working both sides of the plate. You see him working both the top and bottom of the zone. He has movement. He has the big breaking ball. Great location. Moves the ball. Lots of pitchability with Jared Kairos. How'd it look in person, Austin?
Oh, it looked – he was out there and in complete control the entire game. Yeah, as you said, I was out there in Fort Wayne, Indiana, to watch the Loons take on the Tin Caps. To see Jared Kairos go up against a Tin Caps team and a lot of these players that he has played against and been very familiar played against them in the playoffs last year, played against them when they were down in single A when Jared was part of the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, and this is his second start against the Tin Caps this season, and he looked just about as good as ever, and the hitters still have no idea what to do with Jared Kairos. It's about that pitchability. He can throw those fastballs, and then that breaking ball just falls off the table as well. Jared Kairos was out there. He was dominant. 5 innings, scoreless, only gave up the one hit, and had 8 strikeouts, too. What more can you ask for Jared Kairos? He's providing length for this Loons pitching staff. He has been so incredibly dominant during his entire stint in high A. There's so much to be excited about with Jared Kairos.
No doubt about that. Another guy that stuck out to me last night, you're seeing right here on your screen, left-hander out of Virginia, Brandon Neek. Look at that firm fastball. Did you have any velo numbers on him? Were you able to see the in-stadium radar gun?
I don't know. I kind of took a peek at it. I don't remember exactly, and I don't want to report anything inaccurately. He was throwing some pretty good heat on it, though.
Yep. Okay. And then that sweeping slider that you're getting ready to see here in a minute. So he was throwing that fastball up in the zone, which was very firm. That one right there. Again, that's Griffin Dorsching again, who, by the way, hit the furthest ball I've ever seen this side of Pete Incaviglia at Oklahoma State. But you're getting ready to see The sweeping slider to lefty. That one. Woohoo. Wow, that's quite a pitch. Watch this one. Man, that's a good pitch, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was a really good pitch. And he came out of the bullpen, and especially during that first inning of work that he had, just came out there and dominated and was able to get a lot of swings and misses, was able to be really effective, especially against the left-handed hitters. And yeah, Brandon Neek is really good, really talented. You can see that slider that just goes away or inside to right-handed hitters. A lot of them were just guessing yesterday at what he was throwing, at what he was able to maneuver around. Brandon Neek is really good. Another solid left-handed relief pitcher for Dave Anderson to work with.
Well, that's I'm glad you said that, because Dave Anderson has turned all of his lefties to gold. Benoni Robles, obviously Jack Dreyer, Ben Harris. When he's had all these guys, Jeff Belge in the past, Christian Suarez. Man, he just seems like he turns those left-handed relievers into gold. So I'm excited to see the progress of Brandon Neek. This is another guy we've talked about a couple of times. Originally out of Canada, went to UL Monroe. Has some uniqueness to his kind of herky-jerky knees and elbows, if you will, type delivery. And that is Lucas Webb. Got a two-inning save last night.
Yeah, so let's take you back a little bit to what was going on during the game, because I think this is incredibly impressive, and I've been so impressed with what Lucas Webb has done during the course of this season. So, eighth inning, Loons are up by 3-4-1. And then Kelvin Bautista, who's really good, another left-handed reliever for Dave Anderson to work with, comes in, struggles a little bit with the command, walks the first two hitters. Gutsy performance by him to strike out Griffin Dorsching, who's such an incredible competitor, strikes out another batter. And then you bring in Lucas Webb to face off against Devin Ortiz, who's a really good, has played incredibly well for the Tin Caps this year. And there's just something about Lucas Webb, especially when he's in these late inning outings, you could see it in his eyes. He is a fierce competitor, and you can tell that he just gets locked in, comes in, gets the final out of the eighth inning. And even when the umpires come and check on him, make sure there's no sticky stuff on him, you can see he's not even looking at the umpire because he's so locked into the game. Lucas Webb has great stuff that just goes by hitters. Struck out four hitters during his 1 1/3 innings to complete the save yesterday. Lucas Webb, great pitcher, definitely a relief pitcher who gets a lot of swings and miss, and a pitcher that Dodgers fans should know about.
No doubt about that. On the offensive side, Dylan Campbell, been telling you about this guy. Of course, he didn't just mash the ball last night. You're seeing, it looks like a line drive in the scorebook, right? But Dylan Campbell, this is a guy that can do everything on the baseball field. I love this guy playing well for the Loons.
Yeah, he's been playing well for the Loons, and especially during that at-bat that he had, I believe he was the guy who kind of led off the rally for the Loons, as you can see during that play right there, to get the Loons onto the scoreboard. He just finds ways, and there's kind of been a saying that the Loons have had, especially on offense, to win it. DC, Dylan Campbell, just finds ways to be productive, to get the baseball into the field where the defenders are not, get some of those base hits, do some of the little things correct to extend innings. And last night he came up with, as you can see right there, a clutch hit where the defenders were not, give the Loons the lead, and they eventually went on to win the game.
Yep, and then the last guy we're going to talk about, Alex Freeland, had a hit right-handed and left-handed and showed his oppo ability. You know, hey, the deal about Alex Freeland, he has the massive power. Can he put the ball in play enough? Can he walk more and then strike out less? That's going to be the key to Alex Freeland. It was good to see him show off his switch hitting skills last night.
Oh, and the tools are really coming together for Alex Freeland to start the season. You can see just with some of the numbers that he has, his triple slash line right now, 367, 516, 571 in a cold, pitching friendly Midwest league. Alex Freeland, in his 14 games that he's had for the Great Lakes Loons to start this season, is just going out there and absolutely performing. Has 8 more walks than he has strikeouts, which is absolutely insane. Shows the level of hitter, this level of plate control that Alex Vreeland has, and his ability to generate consistent contact through the early course of the season. I've been really impressed by that. And you have seen him during his appearances for Great Lakes during this season just come out clutch, was 2-for-4 yesterday with a walk, a couple of clutch key hits, an RBI to there as well. And in front of some of his family that was in attendance in Fort Wayne yesterday, you got to love it for free Alex Vreeland.
No doubt about that. So let's move up to the double A level. The guy we're going to talk about is a guy that's very intriguing. Dodgers just got him out in the offseason. A former first-round draft pick. I know you don't have a whole lot of history with him because he never played at Great Lakes. But this is Austin Beck. This is a guy that plays the outfield. And just the way he swings whenever he hits the baseball, there's just such little movement to his swing. I love just how simple things are. Watch this. It's like how simple that is. But just how much power he has. Watch the power that Austin Beck has there to the opposite field. So I like the simplicity. It shows me that he is country strong in his hands. And so that allows him to be simple, which should allow him to be more consistent. Again, only 25 years old. So you have these guys that were first-round draft picks like in 2017 or whatever, and it's a long time ago, and you're thinking, well, maybe they're not going to make it this or that. Don't forget, man, they're only 25 years old, and Jason Martin, whenever I was able to interview him, he had a great statement about that. Hey, everybody's timetable is different. So I definitely think Austin Beck, with his power, with his talent, is somebody Dodgers fans should at least have on their radar.
Yeah, and he's going out there and performing to this part of the season, putting up some of the best numbers that he's had in the minor leagues. And this is something to remember, that every single player's development track is different. Perhaps the Dodgers have found an absolute steal in an Austin Beck who's showing some of that power, already has 3 home runs, has a couple of doubles as well, is showing some good things at the plate for the Tulsa Drillers. Don't give up on a guy like an Austin Beck quite yet, especially coming in to this Dodgers farm system, coming in and being surrounded by these Dodgers coaches. There is a lot of potential, and there's a reason why he was a very early round, first round draft pick. That's because a lot of the talent is in there. The Dodgers are perhaps starting to unlock it with Austin Beck.
Another guy last night that had another majestic home run right there, Jose Ramos. Go to my social medias, Twitter, Instagram, and listen to Dennis Higgins. I've said this a couple of times, but when Jose Ramos hits home runs, he hit like the farthest one that Dennis Higgins had ever seen in Tulsa. And Dennis Higgins, I'm telling you, he's a guy that, like John Miller, the Hall of Fame type announcer for the Giants, the guy who used to do Sunday Night Baseball. Very familiar with Dennis Higgins. He's been around forever. He's widely known as one of the best broadcasters, not just in minor leagues, but in all of baseball. He's been around and done just about everything. And every time Jose Ramos hits a home run, Dennis Higgins is like, wow. I mean, you can just hear it in his voice about how impressed he is with the power of Jose Ramos. So definitely take some time. Go to my Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Find that video of Jose Ramos' home run last night and listen to Dennis Higgins. It's all you need to know about the power potential of Jose Ramos.
Oh, he's got some serious pop to him. Already has 6 home runs on the season and much, much more to come. Could we be seeing a 30 home run type season at the minor league level for Jose Ramos? Right now, he seems to be on track to do that. And you can see just with the swing right there, again, encourage you to listen to that. Listen to the call. That's going to give you a little bit more context. Jose Ramos, right now, the power 100% is there, slugging at a .557 rate. That's his slugging percentage. Jose Ramos is going out there and hitting bombs.
Trey Sweeney had a nice night as we move up to the dry afternoon, I guess it was. Of course, it's Albuquerque, so the second game in that series that there's been 30 runs scored. So I mentioned I hesitate to talk a whole lot about by the offense, but hey, you guys know how much I love Trey Sweeney's swing. 4 hits yesterday, got to talk about that, right? Had a second home run, 7th double, 5 RBIs. Sweeney's now all the way up to .292 on the season. His OPS is at .895, and he has hits in 6 games in a row and 3 multi-hit games in his last 5, and he's 11 for his last 22. That's the kind of offensive streaks that Trey Sweeney can go on. Plus, I think with his swing, he can also be consistent to add to that. So I love this guy's offensive game.
Yeah, he's got a really good offensive game. All of the tools are there for Trey Sweeney to be able to put it together, to be able to become just a great dynamic type player who can also play the shortstop position, which I know the Dodgers fans are concerned potentially about going forward in the future. With the continued development of a Trey Sweeney as he continues this journey in Oklahoma City, keep an eye out for him because he could very well be part of this future picture, this future puzzle for the Dodgers going forward.
We talk about Hunter Fiducia a lot at the catcher's position. This is Chris Oakey. Chris Oakey quietly is having a very good year as depth at catcher too. He had a three-hit day yesterday. Oakey is hitting .294 on the year. Had a couple of RBIs, and he has hits in four of his last five games. He showed pretty well in spring training, showed off some of his skills. So another depth piece at the catcher position for the Dodgers in Chris Oakey. And then that's going to move us to J.P. Feireisen, who threw last night. If I can actually get to his video and get it up there. J.P. Feireisen right here that you're seeing on the screen. This is a good look at him from behind home plate. 2.2 scoreless innings last night, four strikeouts and no walks. Gave up just one hit. And when you're facing what we saw with Walker Buehler and Blake Treinen, that environment's not easy to pitch in Albuquerque. So J.P. Feireisen was very impressive last night.
Yeah, to come out of a game in Albuquerque and go scoreless, that is incredibly impressive for J.P. Feireisen, who went out there, provided length to his Oklahoma City Baseball Club pitching staff, was able to generate strikeouts, and most importantly, put up a zero in an environment and in a series where it seems like every game is ending with a combined 20 to 30 runs scored, and that might be putting it lightly on the way that the series is going. He's starting to pitch pretty well, and especially with this Dodgers team that seems to need and use and have this up-down trade with pitching staff, it's great to see J.P. Feireisen, who the Dodgers have intentionally kept around for a while within this organization, start to get back on the right track. And if you can pitch it in Albuquerque, you can do it anywhere at the AAA level, which means that he's just a call-up away from returning to this Dodgers club and getting back on track to being the major league-type relief pitcher that we've seen in the past with J.P. Feireisen.
Just ask Walker Buehler or Blake Treinen. There are times where it's tougher to pitch in AAA than it is the major leagues when you're at a place like Albuquerque. Because, I mean, not only just the altitude, and this is Steven Gonsalves that you're seeing here, not just the altitude, but talking to Mark Washington, your breaking stuff doesn't rotate and move the way it normally does. And so it's just a massive adjustment period. So very impressive for J.P. Feireisen. Again, who you're seeing here is Steven Gonsalves. Gonsalves, hey, roller coaster of inning last night. Gave up a hit, gave up two walks, but then also had two strikeouts and went with a scoreless fourth inning. This is a guy I just wanted to make sure that you knew about because you talk about needing left-handed relief pitching. This is a guy that has major league experience, 29.1 major league innings. So not an incredible amount, but he's the exact type of depth piece the Dodgers like, a guy that knows what a major league clubhouse looks like. And he sat 94.3 last night. Actually, he sat 93.1 and hit 94.3. So I wanted to make sure that Dodgers fans know about Steven Gonsalves.
Yeah, he could be one of those guys that gets called up, part of this up and down trend. You might see him for a few innings, or if he has some success, you might see him for even more. Right now, he has in his 12 innings of work in Oklahoma City, 18 strikeouts. And if you're generating a lot of swing and miss, if you're generating a lot of strikeouts, we know how much the Dodgers appreciate and like to see that out of their pitchers. That has the potential to be rewarded with a call up to the big leagues, depending on the depth and depending on the needs of the Dodgers at times. And with him, especially being a left-handed reliever, watch out for Steven Gonsalves.